Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Lapointe Group conference call. If at any time during this call you need assistance, please press star zero for the operator. I would now like to turn the conference over to David Lapointe. Please go ahead.
Thanks, operator. Okay, here we go again. Lapointe conference call. I want to just start with a quick thanks to my staff, which have been unbelievable. We've been coming to the office, which has been great. There's been no traffic either direction and really no one else in the building other than Lapointe Group people. And I thank everyone for coming in. And listen, we got lots of space in between our desks. We're not high-fiving or low-fiving, depending on the markets. But it works better for us. And everybody's been working super long hours in a stressful environment. So again, thanks everyone, whether it's admin, trading, my portfolio manager partners from Mark Rinfred, Fletcher Hammonds, and Darcy Crow, really hardworking and fantastic. Just a quick second call is thank you to the clients. And you guys have been unbelievable. Most of the people calling in are asking how I'm doing, how Mark's doing, and Darcy's doing. And at the end of the day, listen, don't worry about us. This is what makes our job really interesting. But thank you very much. It's really supportive. So again, clients have been fantastic through this. So thanks again. So let me start the call by just some of the economic data that we're looking at right now. So in the last 6 weeks, the U.S. has now officially shed 30 million jobs, which is wiping out the entire jobs gained since 2009. Canada lags in its data, but there's little doubt that we will be at the kind of the one-tenth numbers of at least 3 million jobs lost. U.S. first quarter GDP has now officially come in, which is quite shocking, at -4.3. And the reason I say quite shocking is because January and February were great numbers, and we really only started this lockdown kind of mid-March. I remember going on a trip in the first week of March to Toronto, and we were kind of talking about it, but nobody really thought it would be to this extent. So, first quarter data is -4. Goldman Sachs is now estimating that the second quarter will come in at -24% on GDP, so marking the sharpest decline in economic activity in U.S. history in such a short period of time. I guess I should point out one other piece of interesting economic data, which has got a few hours left in it, but the stock markets are on pace for their best month since 1974. So here we go, terrible data, and the stock market is rising. I'm going to quote something from Kevin Vandermeer, who runs our research department at Canaccord, and it's actually a quote from a website called A Wealth of Common Sense. What it says is the worst thing you could do in an investment environment like this is assume there is only a singular path forward. The second worst thing you could do is assume you know exactly what this path is. The market will continue confounding investors of all shapes and sizes, so it's best to keep an open mind from here. I'll give you some interesting statistics that were part of this website, which is, you know, the stock market showed strong gains in maybe the two most uncertain times of history since 1900, which was World War I and World War II, and the stock market did very well during those times. And I will point out something very, very interesting, because last time we pointed out what stocks have done in pandemics, and if you can remember, we pointed out that stocks actually do very well, especially coming out of the pandemic. But earnings growth, meaning corporate profits, have been negative since 1930, 30 times. In 23 of those times where corporate profits are declining sequentially from 1 year to the next, in 23 of those years, the stock market was up. Okay, now I went back to 1930 and looked at the Dow every year. In those 90 years, the stock market was down 30 times in those 90 years. So randomly, the stock market goes up 66% of the time, and yet when earnings are negative, as they are now, the stock market goes up 76% of the time. So the worst thing we can do is assume that we know, I can see it, the economy is going to decline, and we should be out of the stock market. Listen, there's a lot of factors going into money flows, and it isn't just about where we are in the current situation. You know, in 2009, the stock market bottomed in March. The economic data would continue to deteriorate for almost six more months, and I can remember watching David Rosenberg talking about how dumb it was, and this was a fake rally, and how bad the data was, and yet the stock market bottomed and continued going very well until, of course, the cycle ended in first week of February of 2020. That was the cycle. We're into a new cycle, which is probably going to see that you've bottomed in March of it was very swift. We hadn't seen a crash since 1987. And the crash comes when there's a very sudden change of sentiment. So the sentiment went from, hey, things are pretty good, to holy cow. And if you took your direction from CNN or Fox News or whatever the headline was, you probably made a foolish economic decision. So what's happening? Why is there such a disconnect between the economy and where the stock market is? Well, first of all, the stock market is always a discounting mechanism. So the stock market is obviously looking beyond the current lockdown. Case in point, Coca-Cola shares came out and their revenues were down a shocking 25%. And when we say shocking, it's the biggest bottler in the world and grocery stores are still open, but they sell a lot of Coke and bottled water and drinks in restaurants. And so with the restaurants at takeout only, there was a sharp decline there. The shares fell about 1% and then started to go higher again. Why? Because the stock market is giving a free pass to the current quarter and starting to look beyond, hey, the business, has the business really changed for the next 20 years or has it changed for this year? And so that's what the market has to ask itself. Secondly, since this pandemic began, interest rates are back down to 2009 levels, which is the Fed funds rate at zero in the United States and 0.25% at the Bank of Canada. So just to put that in perspective, you're negative, the economy's terrible, so you decide to put your money in risk-free U.S. Treasury bills. And you call our trader, Susanna, and you say, what can you get me on $1 million? And she says, 0.01%. So just to put that in perspective, on your $1 million T-bill, that would produce $100 of interest over one full year. Okay? So that doesn't really look very appealing. You have got to say that's where I want to be in the long run, you've got to be pretty negative. So then you say, well, Susanna, what can you get me for a 10-year bond? And we're looking at yields pretty near 0.5%. So you say, well, what about if we go longer? What about a 20-year bond? 1% per year for 20 years, okay? So that would be just over, including compounding, about 22% over a 20-year period for a risk-free bond. Okay, to put that in perspective, the Dow Jones Industrial Average has never done that poorly ever over 20 years. Even if you're the worst market timer on the planet and you bought the market, the day before the Great Depression. 20 years later, you would have done better than what bonds are offering today. And I want to give you maybe the most important consideration for why the market has started going up, okay? And again, I don't have the path going forward for the next 90 days. I do know that this lockdown will be temporary, and I do know that the economy will recover from where it is today, okay? But this may be the most important thing. And the Federal Reserve Board, what they call, has been injecting liquidity. Okay, now injecting liquidity is code for money printing. Now I'm going to get a little technical here, so I know not everyone will follow me, but it's important to kind of get a little, if you just understand money printing, that's okay. But I want to explain the mechanism of how money is printed, okay? And let's say that investor A sells a bond to investor B, $1 million bond. Okay, so investor A sells the bond, delivers the bond to investor B. Investor B gives investor A $1 million. You with me? There is no change in the money supply. One guy's out a million, one guy's got a million in his pocket, and he owns the guy that's out a million owns the bond. Okay? That's just a buy-sell transaction. Now, let's say the Fed is injecting liquidity. The Fed buys the bond from investor B, okay? Or investor A, I said, was the buyer, the seller. So now the guy sells the bond, the Federal Reserve is the buyer, and that guy's sitting on $1 million. That million is brand new money. Okay, brand new. It didn't exist before. You sold your bond, you're sitting with $1 million. So the first place, most of that printed money, and we are talking about numbers of around $6 trillion, okay? 30% of GDP of money supply has been injected in a six-week period. So, of course, most of that money is sitting in those $100 per million T-bills because they sold the bond. Some of it's going back into the bond market. So they sold a bond, bought another one. But some of it is going into McDonald's, Coca-Cola, or Johnson & Johnson because the dividend yields are six times higher than you would get on a 10-year bond. And why would we think that in this environment that Johnson & Johnson or McDonald's are going bankrupt? We're not. So this is what's happening. We got to remember that the stock market is a weighing mechanism and it's a place to park wealth. And one of the things that drives that is what are the alternatives, okay? And I've said this before. Many clients have heard me say this many times. The four most important words in stock market history are, don't fight the Fed. When the Fed is injecting liquidity, stocks have a history of going up. And by the way, the only time the Fed is injecting liquidity is when the economy is terrible, like 2009, okay? That's what gets it going. Now, I want to talk to you, market, three reasons. Market's looking beyond the current quarter. Alternatives are terrible in terms of interest rates and bonds. And again, the Fed injecting liquidity is probably the most overlooked, and I haven't heard anybody talking about it on any of the financial channels. But here's the thing that we also need to talk about, and thank you for a couple of questions about this. So I'm trying to answer all the questions in my presentation too. I want to talk to you for a moment about Dave Lapointeven's first investment, okay? I'm in school, I got a paper route, and I've saved $100, and it's 1981. The first investment I ever made was a Canada savings bond. and the yield was 19.5%. And the reason it was 19.5% was that the government of Canada, for the first time in its history, was running the biggest deficit since World War II, and they went to issue some bonds, and they went to issue some 20-year bonds at 17.75%, and there were almost no takers. The government of Canada was out of money. So we had to jack up the savings bonds rate to 19.5% because the government was in desperate need of money, because we had a prime minister that was running massive deficits. That prime minister had a last name of Trudeau. Okay? Now some of you may be chuckling, because we have another Trudeau that doesn't really understand that money doesn't grow on trees. Okay? When I watched the CBC News, it was a couple weeks ago, and every student is going to get $1,250 or $5,000, and it's going to cost us $9 billion. I kind of shuddered. Now, I don't mean to pick on Trudeau, because Trump's doing it and everybody's doing it. If you're left, right, center, everybody's handing money out like it was growing on trees, okay? And I think that this is something that needs to be addressed with our investment thesis going forward. There was a speech from Jerome Powell, who really sets the world's benchmark interest rates in the United States, chairman of the Federal Reserve Board. And he was talking about inflation is not a concern. We're going to keep injecting liquidity as long as we have to. So we're not concerned about inflation. We're going to continue to inject liquidity. Oh, really print money. Okay, now, this brings us to an interesting point. So going forward, let's jump forward to 2021. The world has got a vaccine. The economy is coming back quite strongly because of all the liquidity and the deficits. But we have these deficits. We are going to be saddled, highly probable, with, I mean, this is not even projection. The debt rate is going to be astronomical from reasonable at the federal level in Canada. Taxes are going to be a problem because they got to pay for this. And most likely, we're going to return to higher inflation because everyone's trying to create this inflation. The way to create inflation is to water down money against things. Now, I want to talk for a second. Again, I'm going to get technical. The Federal Reserve is buying every bond in sight. Now, this is one of the reasons I gave you the three big reasons the market's recovered. I'm going to give you a fourth reason, and that is that the credit spreads are not acting at all like they did in 2009. And that's because the Federal Reserve is not only buying Treasury bonds, but they're buying corporate bonds that are investment grade and corporate bonds that are junk rated. So they're buying every bond in sight, and so companies are able to refund and borrow into this market and have enough capital to get through the lockdown. But I want to talk about, there's two departments that are involved in this. One is the Federal Reserve, and the other is the Treasury. So the Treasury, the Federal Reserve is buying every bond in sight, and that's kept interest rates shockingly low despite the outlook for higher inflation. But in the Western world is going to need to borrow $20 trillion. Now, why was Dave Lapointe able to buy a 19.5% savings bond? Because the world is going to be, instead of now demand from the central banks, we are shortly going to start embarking on the biggest supply of brand new bonds being issued. Now, while I was all over lending the desperate government of Canada money at 19.5%, I am not going to lend the government of Canada. I will not partake in a 10-year bond being offered by the government of Canada at half of 1%. I have no interest in that. Now, the world issues massive bonds, one has to ask. The Fed will have stopped buying because we're into recovery, but we have all the supply. So think just supply and demand. As I said, we're not on a pre-course set path, as I quoted earlier in the session, but think supply and demand. The Fed's been buying every bond in sight, and the Treasury is going to start issuing the highest amount of new bonds for sale. And Canada's going to compete with the United States, with Britain, with every European country, with every Asian country. Everyone's running debt. So supply and demand, we need to keep pace. Inflation is going to be a thing that is probable to go higher. Bond prices, too much supply means bond prices go down. That's going to be the reason that I say that this bull market that we're in now will not be a 10-year bull market, because the greatest thing to worry about in the stock market is all of a sudden when rates start to go up, and that could be sooner rather than later, and I don't mean now. The earliest that would be at the end of next year, but that's something we're going to watch, because that will be a big problem for stocks. But what's the best outlook? And it might be like the 1950s for a long time, which is inflation in the early 50s. World War II is over. We've printed money to pay off the debt. We've run big deficits. Inflation in the early 50s was 8%, and yet rates were essentially zero. So can you imagine all the people that feel comfortable in cash in the 50s? Just uncertainty, the war ended, might be another war. Hey, you're losing 8 points to inflation every year. Your money's devaluing. So, listen, inflation is a real problem. World War II, the cost of living for the 40 years after World War II ended, the cost of living went up tenfold. Okay? So, they never paid off World War II debt. We inflated it away. We made it smaller. If anyone that thinks that we're going to pay off this debt, raise your hand. Oh, I see there are no hands out there. Well, I actually can't see you, but because we're not on a Zoom video. So what's the investment strategy to not only stick handle the next 6 months? What's the investment strategy to stick handle debt deficits? And look, I want to talk just for a moment, Bank of America report that came out about 3 weeks ago. And it's titled Gold, the only money that can't be printed. Target $3,000 an ounce U.S. In the next 18 months. I think that that's an integral part of a portfolio in a time of money printing. And as I say, gold has always been accepted as a currency anywhere in the world. You can take a maple leaf gold coin and you can exchange that for money almost anywhere in the planet. You take a $100 Canadian bill, and most countries will look at you like, I'm not, what is that? So, listen, gold has always been a universally accepted money, and I'm not buying the Bitcoin is the new gold. I think gold is the gold, and I think it's doing what it ought to do. If you want to preserve wealth, you're better in a business. Coke and McDonald's will preserve your wealth way better than money in the bank. You know, as I said, the price of a Big Mac when I was a kid was 39 cents. It's $5.99 today. If McDonald's doesn't open a single other store, you're going to get an inflation-adjusted profit without any expansion. So, again, old-time clients will remember the real return bonds. They don't yield, they yield zero today, so their new real return bonds are great, great companies that pay dividends. Gold, good companies, and I'll give a shout out for maybe one of the greatest opportunities I've seen since real return bonds, and clients will remember purchasing them in the 90s and how much money we made. But Canadian reset preferred shares like a BCE or even, Enbridge, Royal Bank, TD Bank, Fairfax, are all priced that rates will never go up again in our lifetime. So you can buy a BCE, and by the way, BCE's business is not down at all. We're still talking on telephones. So you can buy, which is Bell Canada, you can buy a BCE preferred stock trading $11 that is paying prime based on prime at $25, okay, per share. So you're buying it at 44 cents on the dollar. So that brings the yield to about 5.3%, okay? And if rates never go up again in our lifetime, I think they will, because the bond supply and demand is going to change, 5.25% is a great yield. They've priced in rates at zero forever. If, however, rates start to go up in the end of 2021 and the market senses a sell-off in the bond market, these things will go back to maybe $20 or par. So you've got a piece of paper with very little downside and will get you through the devaluation and what's coming in terms of the deficits and debt in an unbelievable risk reward. So again, even though the markets have come back, I'm skeptical of buying the S&P 500. The NASDAQ is, you know, almost back to a new high, which is your FANG stocks. But beneath it, it's still chaos, and there are still unbelievable investment opportunities. And I think the thing to do is stop asking the question, what's the market going to do in the next couple of weeks, and say, how do I position my portfolio, say, for 2021 and 22? Because I can't predict the market in the next couple of weeks, but chaos brings opportunities, and that's where we are, and we still are, and so we'll stick handle the next few months, but we got to stick handle the recovery, because we got a lot to worry about still, and we're putting ourselves in a very dangerous position by handing out money that grows on trees. So I hope I've answered your questions. Feel free to fire me an email. Thanks all the clients for your patience, and Mark and I and Darcy and Fletcher have been trying to reach out to as many people as possible and to touch base with everyone. And again, thanks for everyone's support. So thanks very much, and I'll get back to my trading desk. Thanks, operator.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the Lapointeven Group conference call for today. We thank you for your participation, and have a nice day.